This is the Motion Church Podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like more information about Motion Church, you can always visit our website at motionchurch.com. If you'd like to contribute to what God is doing here at Motion, you can do that at motionchurch.com/give. We hope you enjoyed today's message.
All right. What's up, everybody?
Hey, so I got to correct Shelly real quick. This is dangerous. That's dangerous. That's a dangerous way to start. She said we've been married for 21 years, so I'm pretty good at relationships. That has nothing to do with me. That is a testament to the patience of one individual putting up with another individual. And she is the patient one, right? So I know myself well enough to know that that is the much better half of this equation. And you probably are too. So good morning. Glad you guys are here with us this morning. So we are kicking off a series this week called Tough Love. We like to do a relationship every February, relationship series every February, because here's the thing. These things are never not relevant. There's never a time where learning more or being reminded of things about relationships and how to have strong, healthy relationships is not relevant, because relationships are always, they're always evolving, they're always changing, they're always being challenged, there are always conflicts, there's always a tension in relationships, and that happens because we're so different. And that's a good thing. Like, God created us differently, and that's perfectly fine. In fact, like, our differences is what makes us so well-rounded, right? The fact that you're good at this, and I'm not, and I'm good at this, and you're not, gives us more capability together, right? So that's how this whole thing works. But within that comes some differences, and differences should be embraced, but they can also lead to frustration, right? When you do something differently, or you see things differently, or you respond differently than I do, then it could cause somebody to be frustrated because you don't understand why the way I see it is like, I don't know why you do what you do, right? But you know why you do what you do, and I've got to have some patience and understanding and understand, obviously, the importance of relationships so that we can work through our differences and be better together. And so I think this is really important, kind of, again, understanding relationships. We get so caught up sometimes in fighting in relationships and not fighting for relationships, right? What happens is like and man, I'm so bad about this. I was in debate in high school because I love to argue. In fact, that's why they put me in debate. Like, as a freshman in high school, I just wanted to argue about everything with all of the teachers, and they're like, we've got something for you. So the next year, sure enough, I was in debate. And then you find out it's not really about arguing as much as it is about, like, research and stuff. So whatever. It was fun. I got to argue a little bit. I love to argue. And so a lot of times what we like to do is we like to make a point and not make a difference, right? We like to make a point. We like to argue our point and prove how we were right, but we forget that it's the relationship that's more important than the point. And so the idea here is let's value relationships. Let's believe in relationships. Let's fight for them, not in them. And the way that we do this is to have tough love. That's the only way that you have a healthy, sustainable relationship is to have tough love. Not necessarily tough love and maybe the way that you've heard that expression used, like somebody is, they're aggressive or they're tough, I guess, in the sense of like they're hard on you. But how about, let's look at it from a different perspective. Tough love as in like you fall down and you get back up, tough. Tough as in like you scrape your knee and you get up and you keep going, tough. It's the old expression, I kind of use this as a mantra for my life, like if you're going to be dumb, you better be tough. I do a lot of dumb things, and so as a result of that, I don't know if the tough came first or the tough was a consequence of all the dumb stuff that I've done, but at any rate, I'm dumb, therefore I'm tough. And if I want to have long and sustained and healthy relationships, I fully understand that there needs to be some toughness in that love. It needs to be a resilient love. It needs to be a bounce-back love. It needs to be a love that doesn't quit when things get a little difficult or things get a little challenging. That's what love, that's not really love, is it? Oh, good morning. Nice. Y'all missed your first cue. Let's see if we can do better next time, right? So, all right, good. So let's talk about tough love. And here's where this idea of tough love, I think there are things that can lead us to tough love. It's kind of the idea, if you go back to the book of Genesis, how many of you guys have ever read the King James Version? Yeah, so in the King James Version of Genesis, you have a lot of begetting, Bugatti, I don't know. So it's always like so-and-so begat so-and-so who begat so-and-so who begat so-and-so, right? And it's lineage and all of these, it's things that are really important, but it's things that it's language for one that we don't generally use. And then so what happens in creation is it says, basically there is a reproduction that takes place of like and kind. So you reproduce after your own kind, right? So, you know, birds don't generally produce crocodiles that I'm aware of. I've heard of snake birds, but I've never heard of crocodile snakes or crocodile birds. That is just a big difference. You've not heard of Google snake birds. It's fascinating. So don't do it right now. Do it later. Do it after church. So you reproduce. Basically, again, this expression, we use this in leadership, you attract what you are, not what you want, right? So you reproduce based on who you are. And I think the idea is same here with tough love. If you want tough love, then you have to do tough things because tough things produces tough love. And one of the tough things, that was a long way around to that idea, wasn't it? So the idea here is there are some tough things that we can do that produce in our relationships tough love. And one of those things, where we're going to start today, is honor. Because that's not easy. Let me be real honest with you this morning. Like, honoring people is not an easy thing. Honoring people, in fact, I don't think it's an intuitive thing. I don't think it's something we do naturally. It's something we do intentionally. I think that our natural inclination is not to honor, but to dishonor. Just listen to kids talk to each other. Stupid, right? Just ripping each other up and down about and stealing things from each other. And like, you got some candy. Now you ain't got no candy because I stole your candy, fool. Right? And they're so mean to each other. And I think that is a natural, the way we naturally progress in terms of honors. Like, we naturally progress towards dishonor. And we have to be intentional about injecting honor into our relationship. So let's talk about our first point here. And we're going to call this honor dismantled. We're going to take it apart. That would be the dismantling, right? So you have to start with this. I believe that God's plan for us as humans is to have strong, healthy, godly relationships. I believe, now we are, again, different, and there is some chaos, there is some dysfunction, but the idea is, I think that we get past all of that, and we have these strong, healthy relationships. And in fact, I think the way that we love each other is a reflection of the way that we understand God, who he is, and how he loves us. It's kind of clear when you read in, you know, John chapter 13, it says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Like, that would be a good place to stop, right? It's like, hey, look, maybe it used to be that you didn't love each other, and maybe you thought this whole God thing was just about your relationship with God, but Jesus is like, I want to take it a step further. It's not enough for you just to love God, but now that love that you have for God has to come through you, and you also have to love each other. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. Isn't it interesting that Jesus is such a dad? In a sense, let me explain. My theology is not too far off. He just said the same thing in about the span of two phrases, right? That you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. Just in case you didn't hear me the first time, or before you say, huh, or before you say, what? I'm going to go ahead and reiterate how important it is that you love one another. I figure my parents in the room would really appreciate that, but that was the second cue that you guys have missed. So this is what it says. So this new commandment, love each other as I have loved you, love one another. And then it says, by this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. So what I think God has done, God's smarter than I am, but I probably wouldn't have done it like this because I don't trust us enough to execute the plan, frankly, right? I am a very skeptical person when it comes to people, and we'll get to all that. There's a reason why. We'll get to it in a minute. So what happened is God chose us and the way that we love each other to be his marketing plan for the world to know him. Like, he chose for the way that we interact with each other, the way that we respond and relate to each other, to be the way the world sees who he is. That is a colossal responsibility on our shoulders, and we have to take this very, very seriously. So I think one of the ways that we can do this, to have these relationships that reflect who he is with honor. In fact, I don't think that you can have a healthy, long-term, sustainable relationship without honor. I can't think of a personal example in my life of somebody who has had a long, healthy, fruitful relationship where honor wasn't involved. So we'll start by looking at the opposite of this, so you can kind of, I guess, to prove a point here, right? So the opposite of honor is, hey, third time's a charm, right? Y'all missed the first two cues. Y'all nailed that one. There we go. So the opposite of honor is dishonor. So what happens when dishonor is in a relationship? I think there is a progression that takes place. It is a progressive destruction of that bond. So you had a relationship, you allowed dishonor to come into the relationship, and this is the progression when it comes to dishonor and what it does to that relationship. The first thing that it does is dishonor leads to disappointment. Have you ever been disappointed in somebody? Like, you know, like not mad enough to kill, but like you're pretty mad. Just an expression. Only an expression, just so we're clear, right? Like just disappointed. Like, man, it's just they're not who I thought they were. Our relationship isn't what I thought it was going to be, right? And you become disappointed, and generally that's a result of dishonor. They don't treat you the way that you thought you should be treated. They don't respect you the way that you feel like you should be respected. They don't value you enough to show you the value you have, so you expect or you anticipate you feel this dishonor in the relationship. You had such high hopes for the type of relationship this would be, and then when there's dishonor, it isn't living up to your expectations. So dishonor initially leads to disappointment. So that's the first step in the progress. But then what happens after that? What had happened was dishonor then leads to discouragement. So you were disappointed at first, and then you're discouraged. And this is kind of a bigger picture thing than disappointment. Like you can be disappointed in a person. The way that I understand this may not be entirely accurate, but it makes sense to me. Like the disappointment's kind of a head thing, like you're thinking about it, right? It's like, oh man, it's really disappointing that's going the way that is, or they're acting the way that they are, or they're being disrespectful, or whatever the case may be. Discouragement is a heart thing, right? The disappointment's in your head, discouragement's in your heart. So when discouragement's in your heart because of the dishonor, what you do is you start to see everybody through that lens. Then you become suspicious of everyone, right? You become cynical. You have a really hard time trusting people. You have a lens that you view people through, and you don't want to honor them because of what somebody else has done to you. So dishonor then leads to discouragement. That's why you hear people say things like, there just aren't any good guys out there. Have y'all ever heard that one? I've heard that one about 3 million times. And then all of the guys that are also looking for a good girl, they're like, well, there just aren't any good girls out there. I'm like, why can't y'all find each other? Like, you know, you've got, but, you know, and the problem, let me clarify all of that. The problem is we're all broken, and our expectations sometimes are so unrealistic because we're expecting somebody to be what we're not, and we're not interested in working on becoming the right one while we're looking for the right one, and so it creates this whole issue. It's a whole problem. So anyway, so people say things like, aren't any good guys out there? Aren't any good girls out there? People just aren't friends like they used to be friends, and relationships aren't what they used to be. So you start to have this discouragement, and it's because of dishonor. And the good news is that it gets even worse, right? So you have disappointment, and then you have discouragement. But dishonor eventually leads to the dismantling of the relationship. It tears it. There is a breaking point in every relationship where you've just had enough of the dishonor, right? Have you ever ended a relationship? So listen, real quick, let me give you guys, this is a funny parenting story. Because Shelly is like parenting 2.0. I'm still like beta version. I'm still working on some things. So Shelly, Tavian, our oldest son, 17, and we've had like the, you know, dating, are you going to date, like who you like, all those sorts of things. And Shelly's like, you can date. You know, basically with our approval, like we need to know who it is. We need to know, they're not an axe murderer or something. Like we kind of need to know these things. At least we can be prepared and have access to. But so Shelly was like, you can date if you break up with them before you have to date them, before you ever date them. Like, let me explain that a little bit better. I need to know that you know how to end a toxic relationship before you get into a toxic relationship. I need to know that you know how to tell that girl to get gone when that girl need to get gone. And so Shelly was like, and to prove that, I need you to break up with me. And it's like created this whole role-playing scenario. That's that 2.0 stuff. I'm telling you, dude, she's so good at this stuff. I'd have been like, no, can't do it. So Shelly was like, so you have to break up with me before you can date anyone. And Tavian just couldn't do it. He's too sweet. Now you were terrible. You did not. Did not. Yeah, you did. And Shelly didn't even know you broke up with her. You did such a good job of it. So the idea here is, and here we are not condoning toxic relationships, right? There are some relationships that you need to get gone with, that need to move on from your life, and that would be absolutely okay. So we're not promoting that, but I am saying that we do need to fight for relationships better than we currently do, right? So again, there's a breaking point where you've had enough of the dishonor, and the dishonor then leads to the dismantling of the relationship. But we don't have to allow this to be the case. So I think that, again, kind of the idea here is dishonor is our natural inclination. I think it's the way that for whatever reason, as humans, this is the tendency that we have. This is the way that relationships trend. Unless we willingly, intentionally choose to have honor and infuse and inject honor into our relationships. It's like the old saying, you've probably heard this, familiarity. That's a fun word to say if you haven't. Y'all say, everybody on three, familiarity. One, two, three, familiarity. Familiarity, anyway. Similarity, nearness, closeness, proximity. I don't know all of the other the synonyms, right? So familiarity breeds contempt. It's like the longer you're with somebody, the closer you get to somebody, the less you honor and appreciate them. And so again, dishonor is the trend, but what we have to do is choose to honor them if we want a relationship that is lasting, enduring, and tough. So that's how we dismantle honor, right, is by dishonoring. So we don't want to do that. We want honor. So let's talk about honor and what honor is, and then we'll talk about how we can implement some of this stuff into our life. Next point is this, called time for honor. Time for honor, as in time for honor. But not really, because there's like a hidden meaning in that. Was that like a cliffhanger? Are you just sitting on the edge of your seats waiting, right? So let's talk about what honor is, and like I said, we'll wrap up with some application. So one of my favorite passages of Scripture about honor, especially kind of like honor in relationships, is Romans chapter 12. And it's Romans chapter 12, verse 10. And what I love about this is kind of getting some context. It's not specifically about, because I think a lot of times we think honor is reserved for like those really, really, really close relationships. Is anybody else kind of, you just, and this is not a wrong way of thinking. Maybe it could be improved. But I think naturally we tend to think of honor is reserved for, you know, husbands and wives and children and mothers and father. You know, that's in Scripture. Honor your mother and father, right? And so maybe we tend to think that honor is for those really close relationships, but I think in Romans chapter 12, you kind of see that it's more broad-natured. In fact, it talks about love, and the word used for love here is the Greek word phileo, which is where we get the expression brotherly love, like Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, which coincidentally does not have any brotherly love, right? Yeah, so Eagles fans, go Chiefs, I don't know. Just letting it be known how I feel and express myself, right? And we'll talk about having differences later and still honoring each other and all of that stuff too. So Philadelphia is, we call it the city of brotherly love, and it kind of comes from this Greek word phileo, which is brotherly love. And so when it's talking about brotherly love, it's not just those really, really close relationships, but it's the way that we as a community collectively interact with each other. We should love each other. And this is what it says, Romans chapter 12, verse 10. It says, be devoted to one another in love, in phileo, this brotherly love. And I love the first part of that. It says, be devoted to one another. Be devoted to one another. And we don't generally have a world that thinks of love as devotion. We have a world that thinks of love as a feeling, right? So we think love is, well, you make me feel a certain type of way, although you can't articulate what that certain type of way is, so you say just a certain type of way. So you make me feel a certain type of way, and I love you until I don't feel a certain type of way any longer. And that's not what love is. Love is more than a feeling. Love is a commitment. Love is a choice, in spite of sometimes how you feel. So devotion is an expression of love. And so I'm committed to you, even if I don't feel how I once felt, I will still be committed to you. And we don't like to hear that. We like Hollywood expressions and interpretations of love, where it's like fairy tales and doves and flowers and romping and playing. And what I've always found fascinating about this is, like, we are dumb enough. I'm going to lump myself into this, right, so we can all be offended. So we are dumb enough to buy into some of these Hollywood iterations of love and expressions of love and, like, these great love stories. And then what happens is, like, sometimes we fail to read the tabloids. The people who are telling us that this is what love is also in their own personal lives do not know what love is. So why would we take advice from people who do not know what love is? I don't know. Y'all get me fired up about stuff that don't matter. Like when Brangelina happened, I was just like devastated, you know? Just, I'm kidding. Is that what they called them? Was that right? Did I get that? Nah, that's not bad. All right, so be devoted to one another in love. And then it says this, honor one another above yourselves. Be devoted to one another in love, and then honor one another above yourselves. Isn't it interesting that the very first thing that it tells us to do after it tells us to honor, I'm sorry, to love each other is to honor each other. And I am fully convinced that words matter and the order of things matter, the way that God's word is set up and established, that everything is intentional. So I think the first step in loving people is to honor them. The Greek word for honor is, this is where our dual meaning of time for honor comes in, is the transliterated. Again, I don't even know what transliterated means, but it just sounds real cool. So the way that we would say it if we're from Texas is time, T-I-M-E. And that's the way we would say this word honor. But the actual kind of the phonetic pronunciation is T-M-A-Y, T-E-E apostrophe M-A-Y. Is that no dash, not apostrophe. You know what I'm saying. Anybody else know what I'm saying? Everybody checked out when I started talking grammar, right? So T-M-A, time, is the Greek word for honor. And this is what the definition of honor is. It is a valuing by which the price is fixed. You determine the value of something. When you determine the value of something, you are honoring that thing. And so in our relationships, what we are doing, kind of to understand this in a very, very simple way, to honor someone means that you are placing a high value on them. To dishonor someone means that you are placing a low value on them or no value at all. So we honor and we place value on them. We dishonor and we are telling them, at least in the way that we are acting or interacting with them, that they're cheap or that they have no value. So the problem with this is, or where this gets really important, it kind of comes back to the idea of God's plan for us is to be his ad counsel to the world, right? We are God's ad campaign to the entire world. It's our responsibility to let the lost and broken world know about a God who loves them. And this is accomplished through the way that we honor and treat each other, the way that we value each other, the way that you treat your spouse, the way that you talk about your spouse when they're not around, the way that you treat your children. And they, look, I get it. They make it hard sometimes. I'm like, well, if you would have honored your mother and father, I wouldn't be feeling the way I feel right now. And I wouldn't be treating you the way I'm treating you, but you didn't do what you were supposed to. So you understand? I get it. But we're still called to honor and ascribe value to them. So the way that we treat our friends, the way that we treat our children, the way that we settle disputes, the way that we settle disagreements, because newsflash, we're going to have disagreements. So you know what we do? Like, we have gotten so soft as a society that now we don't even want disagreements. We want echo chambers with only people who reiterate our ideas back to us. And we couldn't even be entertained by the idea that somebody else has a different viewpoint or a different opinion and that we could actually have a civil conversation about the differences that we have. And we could honor each other enough in spite of our disagreements to love each other. Y'all don't get me started. Okay. So all of this is really important because, again, the way that we do all of this stuff, the way that we honor one another, it's a window. It gives the world a window into who God is. Because there are a lot of people who have these misperceptions about God. There are a lot of people who think God is angry. There are a lot of people who think God is mad at them, or he's this like distant God who doesn't really care. He's unaffected by the things that we go through. Like, and we know that none of that's true, but this is the way that a lot of people feel. And a lot of times it's because they're looking, we're a window into who God is, and they're looking in that window and they're not seeing really who God is because of the dysfunction in our relationships. I'll tell you guys a quick story about windows. This is one of those stories that, like, what were you thinking in hindsight? Y'all ever have any of those? You know, my understanding is you don't ever ask a young boy why he did what he did, because the answer is always, I don't know, right? It just seemed cool. It felt like a good idea in the moment. And what's dangerous is I don't know that you ever outgrow that as a male, right? I think it's always there. Like, why did you do that? It just felt good in the moment, right? So one time, Shelly and I were in Marshall, and we were driving around. I don't even know what we were there for. I love old properties, old houses. Anybody else? Love them. I just think they're so cool. Like, I just love old things, like cars, houses, just random, complete. I would have, like, trinkets and knickknacks if Shelly would let me, but she won't. She just won't, right? I just love old stuff. So we're driving around Marshall, and there's this super cool old house that's clearly abandoned. Ain't nobody been at this thing in a really, really long time. So genius me, I'm like, let's go look at it, right? It's daytime. It's not night. It's not weird. I mean, it's close to the police station. Like, nobody's dumb enough to break into a property when the police station's closed, right? Or are they? I don't know. It's Marshall. Anything can happen. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. If you're from Marshall, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, okay, so listen. So we saw this awesome house, and we're like, let's go check it out. So we park. Again, Shelly's the whole time like, is this a good idea? I'm like, of course, it's the best idea ever. What are you talking about? So we walk up on the porch, and I check the door. Like, I'm trying to see this thing, not just, like, admire from afar. I want to see this thing for all of its splendor from the inside out, right? So we start pulling on the door. Door's locked. So I'm like, well, maybe a window's open, right? Because I'm stubborn. If I'm not anything, I'm persistent. So we were going to look for a window that was open. Was looking for a window that was open. So we go to the first window, and I kind of reach down and grab it to see if I can jimmy it up, and it wasn't moving. So then I was just like, well, I just want to see what's inside this window. So I leaned over, and I looked inside this window, and there was a dude laying on a bed looking at me with his eyes wide open. It freaked me out. But I nailed it. I crushed the response. Like, I was freaked out. I am not going to lie. But I was so cool. So I'm leaning over. I'm looking at this guy, and he's looking at me. I'm like, what's up, man? And I just turned and walked away. And so Shelly was like, let's go. We got to get out of here, freaking out. So the bottom line is, the homeless dude beat me to this really cool house. And he moved up. He liked it as much as I did. He just moved in it before I could. And he locked the door. He locked me out. It ain't even his house, and he locked the door. That ain't got no sense. Like, at least let other people come in and hang out with you. So speaking of windows, right? I think people are looking in this window called our lives to try to find out who God is. And if there's not honor, maybe we're not reflecting him as well as we could or we should. So let's get into some application. I'm going to give you some ways, just four things that I think that we can do to help us honor better, not gooder, because I got in trouble. I said that last time, and I was rebuked strongly for that. So all of this is really good information. I love the idea. Like, I love information. I love, again, knowledge, but unless you apply it, it's not wisdom, and I would rather apply it. Honor is not for the textbooks, but it's for the real world that we live in and the world that we are creating and the relationships that we are responsible for stewarding. Like it's not just enough to know about it. You got to do something with it. So here's our first point. Disagree with the point, but don't dishonor the person. Disagree with the point, but don't dishonor the person. I'm going to say this about 400 times so that we get this, because, God, we are terrible at this. Not this church, but the world, right? Everybody in here, you're amazing at this. You never struggle with having disagreements with people and making it personal. You would never do that. Disagree with the point, but don't dishonor the person. One of the most important ways that we can honor each other is to not allow our differences to divide us. Okay, let's take this back. Just the most fundamental, basic understanding of a relationship. Let's take a husband and a wife. So there are so many things about that relationship that are going to make it unique, because each of those individuals are entirely different. And you've seen, like, physiological differences. You've seen psychological differences in the way that males and females think. So it is from the jump, you have people who are different, who are going to disagree, who are going to see things entirely differently, trying to make this thing work. And so in that, you're going to have some disagreements. Shelly and I, we don't have disagreements. We're beyond that. We have intense fellowship. That's the spiritual way of saying, you was wrong, I was right, because that's kind of where most of the time I'm like, yeah, you're right, you know. There's maturity in kind of like, you know, humbly admitting that you were wrong. And I ain't there yet. I'm working on it, man. I am working on it. Because, again, I like to argue. So dishonor the point, but don't, or, sorry, dismiss or disagree about the point, but don't dishonor the person. So in a marriage, you can see how this would be important. In friendships, this is really important. Again, two very unique people with different backgrounds, different upbringings, different ideas about how the way the world works and what's the best thing for the world. So when you have a disagreement, talk about the disagreement, but don't dishonor the person. Don't make it personal. Talk about the stuff, but don't ever make it personal, like, because we are so visceral and we're so emotional, and then you start getting worked up when you're arguing about the thing, and then you stop talking about the thing and you start talking about the person, right? I mean, y'all know, y'all would never do that, right? You would never, never, ever start talking about the person. And we're so bad about this in arguments because, like, then we'll start talking all the way around a conversation, like an argument or an idea or a dispute. And we've made it about everything but the thing that we were actually, we forget sometimes what we were arguing about in the beginning because we've gotten so worked up. Nobody else? Okay. All right. So disagree with the point, but don't dishonor the person. And I believe that in the world that we're in currently, kind of this climate that we're in, this is just my opinion. It's right. You can disagree with it, but don't dishonor me, right? My opinion is like we're at least headed towards, if not currently in, a climate in which we pit people against each other as enemies if they have different ideas about how the world works. And so now we can't even have a disagreement. We immediately dishonor if you think differently than I do, if you view things differently than I do, I'm going to immediately dismiss you, I'm going to dishonor you, and the disagreement divides us. Honor is greater than our disagreements. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8, it says this, "Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sins." You could be wrong. You could be wrong. I could be wrong, and we should still love each other. It doesn't mean you approve necessarily of what they're doing, but we can still love them. We can still honor them, even if we have a disagreement. So love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sins. So that's the first point. Disagree with the point, but don't dishonor the person. Second point, values appreciate. Have you guys, anybody pay property taxes on your house? Have you looked at them? Like year over year? I'm like, how come, can somebody explain to me how come this thing done went up as much as it done went up, but ain't nothing else? Like the income side of my life and going up like the output side of my life. You know what I mean? I'm like, just like make this stuff make sense. So what we've learned very clearly over the last year is that values appreciate. Values appreciate. Sometimes they appreciate too much. I need you to depreciate it. I need you to stop appreciating me so much. Like bring that thing back down a little bit. So values, they appreciate. They go up. When it comes to honor in our lives, what we do, the tendency is it starts to depreciate. The longer somebody's with us, the less we appreciate them, the less we find them interesting, the less we find them fascinating, the less we again, the more we take for granted what it is that they bring to the table. So we're dishonoring. They have less value. What the reality is that somebody, the longer they're in your life, the more they know you and they still put up with you, that has tremendous value, right? I tell people all the time, and I don't know why, like, people have these strong misconceptions that I'm interesting. I am not at all. Like I am routine. I am vanilla. I'm very bland and boring. Not vanilla as in skin tone, but like vanilla as in bland, right? Because I'm more mocha, you know? Macchiato. Latte, maybe. I like lattes. Those are good. So I just, it's so weird. Sometimes people think that I'm probably, I guess what I'm trying to project is that, look, I just don't want you to be disappointed. I'm going to let you know up front that I've got about 5 good jokes, and that's it. And then you hear those same 5 jokes, you know, well, variations of the same joke, right? So the idea here, my point is this. Like, look, if you're trying to be fascinated, I ain't the one. Like, I'm not going to fascinate you. And what I'm trying to communicate in that is, like, let me back off. I probably shouldn't have said any of that. Everybody look at this light. Okay, we're done. The idea here is what we tend to do is like we're fascinated with people in the beginning. The new is so interesting. And then when the new and the fascination wears off, we just don't value them like we should. Here's what I value. This is, and I think this is something you learn with time. I'm not going to say I'm old, but I'm getting there, right? This is something you learn with experience, right? This is something you learn. That's another way of saying you're old, right? This is what you learn with wisdom. Is that what is more valuable than interesting and new to me is people who are with me regardless of what's going on. What is more interesting, what is more valuable to me than people who are like, you know, that kind of are exciting and like they're so cool and they've got all, I just want people that are consistent. I just want people who are steady. I just want people who, that if I pick up a phone and I'm in a bind, I got a problem, I got something that's going on in my life and I need somebody to pull up. Not like anything crazy is going on. I mean, it could be. It just could be. You never know, right? Because maybe I am interesting. Maybe I got stuff going on you don't know about. You know what I'm just kidding? So when I call somebody, and I don't, if I call you, something's up. It is up, because otherwise I'll text you. But if I call you, you better answer the dang phone. But if you call me, I might or might not answer the phone. I don't know. I'm just kidding. Let me get out of this. My point is, man, I just value consistency so much more now than I maybe used to. Used to, it'd be like, well, who's interesting? Who's fascinating? Who's got this? And what's so frustrating about that is, like, in hindsight, you see that's really just manipulation, right? You're just using people to get something out of them, or something that benefits you, or something that helps you get to where you're trying to go in. And then because we're not committed to each other, when they don't have anything to offer us any longer, we usually just dismiss them. So relationships should go up in value. They should appreciate, not depreciate. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24, it says this: one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. Let's put this to the test. So if you went through your whole list of all your friends on whatever social media platform that you would choose to use in this, like if you're between this age and this age, it would be Facebook. If you're between this age and this age, it would be Instagram. If you're between this age and this age, it would be Snapchat or TikTok or whatever, right? Again, like we demographically identify with different apps. Whatever app you choose, then you go through that list of friends. That's such a loose term, right? You go through that list of friends, and if you were in a real situation, you were in a spot where you desperately needed somebody to show up, how many of those people would actually show up, right? You got some flaky friends. You got some unreliable friends, and people who have unreliable friends soon come to ruin. And then it says, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Now, what we do with this is we kind of generally associate that with Jesus. We say, oh, well, yeah, people are going to let us down, but Jesus is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. But this specific passage isn't related to Jesus specifically. It is related to us and the way that we are to interact with each other. The way that this brotherly love is expressed is that we stick closer than a brother. So we've got disagree with the point, but don't dishonor the person. Values appreciate. The next one is this. We're going to call this one leading honor. How many of you football fans in the room? Yeah, Cowboys going to the Super Bowl? Maybe next year. Like, we are the most optimistic people in the world. Like, we're fools. Like, right? We're, you know, can't figure everything out. But anyway, so you got the Super Bowl coming up. I love football. Football is it's God's gift to humanity, right? I'm just convinced of that. It's like, you guys can't get anything else right, but you got football right. So leave it alone. So one of the things that you learn in football is that when it comes to throwing the ball to a receiver as a quarterback, do you throw it where he's been? Do you throw it where he's at? Or do you throw it where he's going? Right? That was leading. I was leading you through the answers to the question, right? So as a quarterback, you throw it where he's going, not where he's been or where he's at. And I think the same thing is true in honor. You don't necessarily throw it where they've been. You don't talk about where they've been. You're not trying to lead them back to where they've been. You don't even necessarily honor them to the level that they're currently behaving, but you honor them to the level of the potential that you think God has for them. You honor them to the level of the place, position, purpose, and destiny that you think God has for their lives. So you don't honor them based on where they've been or where they're at currently, but you lead with honor. Like, a good example of this, I've heard it said, and I believe this, like I've seen this kind of come to fruition in my own life and other people that I know. Inside of every man is a prince and a punk. Inside of every man is a prince, and there's a punk hanging out in there too. And do you know which one comes to the surface? Do you know which one rises up and becomes the predominant character of that person? The one that you talk to. The one that you either honor or dishonor. If you're dishonoring, the punk comes out. If you're honoring, the prince will come out, right? And obviously, that's complicated. It's a very simple oversimplification, but you guys kind of get the idea that we can lead with honor. We can try to draw out the potential in people. And that's not just for men. That's for women, too, obviously, right? So we understand that we have power in our words to call out the potential that people have. It's leading honor. You know that Jesus did this. Jesus did, you kind of go back to the story when he called some of his disciples. He's like, hey, I see you guys are fishers, like fishermen. You're out here throwing your nets. Like, that'd be so fun, like the big seines, just right, and pulling them in. So they're out there fishing, and he was like, hey, why don't you drop your nets and come follow me? And they're like, what? Why would we do that? Like, dude, we just met 3 seconds ago, and you're asking me to give up my lucrative fishing career. Said no one ever. Actually, it's like 3% of those guys get paid, and the rest of them just really like fishing. So let me drop my career and follow this guy that I just met. And they were like, why would I do that? And Jesus said, come follow me, and I'm going to make you not just fishers of fish with their scales and their stank. Y'all know fish stank, right? Right? It smells so bad. So not only are you going to be fishers, but you're going to be fishers of men. So this is where you are, and I'm calling you to where I know that you can be. I know that you should be. I know that you've created you to be. I'm calling you to your purpose and to your destiny. He did the same thing with Peter. Peter was known as Simon, right? Simon is such, it's not as authoritative as Peter, right? Simon is like chipmunkish. Alvin, Simon, Theodore. Right, I don't know how you do the chipmunk without dubbing the audio, right? So it's kind of chipmunkish, but Peter, this is what Peter means. So Jesus is having this conversation with Simon. He's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to change your name. You're Simon, but from now on, I'm going to call you Peter, which is Petra, which means rock. And upon this rock, I'm going to build my church. Like, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And it all came from what? Jesus speaking to the potential that he had, leading him with honor, not where you've been, not the mistakes that you've made, but where I see you going. And that's one of the things that we can do for each other. Lead with your honor. Like, don't speak to where they're at currently. Speak to where you believe God has for them to be. So you've got disagree with the point. Don't dishonor the person. Values appreciate. Leading with honor. And then the last one is this. In case you're wondering what, like, how do you implement this? Like, where do you start? What relationship do you start with? Do you do it at work? Do you do it at home? The answer is yes. It's yes. So here's the last point. It's to honor up, honor down, and honor all the way around. There's a dance that goes with it, and I wouldn't do it for the first experience, but I like you guys so much, and I'm a little more limber now. No, I'm not going to do it. So it's honor up, honor down, honor all the way around. So in case you're wondering, like, how do you do this? Where do you implement this? How does this apply to your lives? It's very simple. So honor up. Anybody who's in position of authority over your life, you know, again, kind of coming back, if you're a child, your father, your mother, honor your father and mother. It's the first commandment with promise. So we start there. If you have a boss or anybody who's in a position of authority in your life, honor them. We live in a culture that we don't like to honor authority. And I get it, right? Because, man, I am, like, I do not like being told what to do. Anybody else? Right? But we are still biblically called to honor people who are in positions of authority over us. And when we honor down, if you are in a position of authority, if you are a parent, if you are a boss, an employer, or whatever the case may be, leadership, so then you honor down. Because sometimes what we think that authority gives us the right to dishonor. And it does not. Position is the weakest form of leadership. Right? Position, that was John Maxwell. That wasn't me. I wish that was me. I'll be like, man, y'all be preaching, boy. Anyway. So position is the weakest form of leadership. Just because you're a leader doesn't mean that just because you're in a position of leadership doesn't mean that you're a great leader. If you want to be a great leader, then you honor and you don't dishonor. Authority does not give you the right to dishonor. So honor up, honor down, and then honor all the way around. Like every person, even the people that are rude. Come on, man. Can I talk to you guys for a second? Even the people that are rude. Even the people that I'm trying to give you money, you are taking my money to give me this food. Can you at least put a little smile on your face and not just be so rude? But you know what? Here's the thing. My responsibility is not how they feel. My responsibility is how I honor them, regardless of the way that they act towards me. And that's that tough love stuff, right? Tell me that's easy, because I know it's not. Like, and again, I don't know if this is like the curmudgeon coming out, like the older you get, the less tolerance you have for stuff. I'm like, Shelly's mom had a friend, I heard the story growing up, that she wouldn't give them their money unless they smiled at her. She's like, I'm giving you my money, you gonna smile at me, honey. I'm like, I like that. That's good. That's real. I mean, you're taking my money. At least make me feel good about it, right? Because your food ain't that good. So, all right, so honor up, honor down, honor all the way around. So in case you're wondering who this applies to, and who we should show honor to, this just about sums it up. So I believe start with those that are closest to you, right? If you're trying to get practice, practice makes perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. then if you want to get better at honoring, start with those easy relationships that are close to you. And then I think the natural outgrowth of that will be is that honor will become more natural to you. And this is really, really, really important because the world is watching. I am a window into who God is. The God that we know, the God that we know that loves them, the God that we know that has a plan for their life, the God that we know died on the cross for their sins, the God that we know that plundered heaven and gave his one and only son so that he could demonstrate to them what love is, even while they were distant from him and sinners, and all of these things that we know, they're looking, and if we don't honor each other properly, they're not seeing any of that. They're not seeing this God who is desperately, madly in love with them and would do anything for them if we're in here infighting and bickering and dishonoring and complaining about each other and talking about people behind their backs. Like, that's dishonor, and they're not seeing the God of the universe who loves them if that's the kind of nonsense we get caught up in. I think this is a great church. I don't think we do. I tell you guys all the time, I'm not playing. I would come to this church even if I wasn't the pastor. I might even volunteer. That's a shameless plug. I would come to Power Couples next Saturday night at 6 o'clock. Is that a pretty good plug? Yeah, there we go. So here's the idea. I don't think we do a bad job of this. I just think there's always room for improvement when it comes to honor because the stakes are so high, because it matters so much. The way that we reflect our love, or the way that we love each other, reflects the love of Jesus to the world around us. So let's honor one another. Amen. Let me pray for us. Jesus, thank you so much for honoring us by placing a value on us. God, we know that a value is what somebody is willing to pay for something. And you paid your life, your blood, you sacrificed, you gave everything for us. God, that makes us invaluable. And we're so thankful that you honored us enough to do that for us. God, I pray that you would help us to, if we understand that, if we grasp the love that you have for us and the depth of the love that you have for us and the way that you honored us, God forbid that we would be selfish enough to keep that love to ourselves, that we would be willing to share that with other people. God, and the simplest way we can do this is by honoring each other. Honor our spouses. If we're dating, to honor them. We have children, to honor them. To the friendships, coworkers, bosses, employees, whatever the case is, God, help us to be people who see others as valuable and to treat them as such. Jesus, we love you. We're so thankful for you. And it's in your precious name we pray. Amen.